From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 21, recorded June 11th through the 16th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. And now, Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100 online at codesmithtools.com. Support is also provided by ExceedZip for .NET, which lets you handle zip, tar, and gzip files on FTP servers, in streams, in memory, and more. Now get 20% off any Exceed component or suite just for listening to Hansel Minutes. Go to shrinkster.com/FPT and use the code HM-20-20. And don't forget to visit peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at PETERBLUM.com. And .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott is recorded live from the TechGet 2006 conference in Boston.
So we're sitting here with John Lamb, hanging out at TechEd. We're over here at the architecture, what do they call these things now? TLCs? It's the Technical Learning Center. How's it going, John Lamb?
I'm doing great, Scott.
And what are you working on that you shouldn't be?
Oh, my God. I'm trying to fix DOSBlog right now so that the the Newtelligence part of DOSBlog that begins with a lowercase where it's not supposed to.
Oh, you bastard.
Well, you know, what can I say, right? But yeah, I'm here to talk about Ruby CLR at TechEd. This is my thing. So at 5 o'clock today, it's about 2 o'clock right now, so 3 hours to go. I'm going to be going on stage to talk about Ruby CLR right after Mahesh talks about Iron Python. So I'll get a chance to make fun of his language and all that good stuff.
Now, Ruby CLR, that sounds like the destabilizing technology. That seems like that's something that's kind of dangerous. Take something controversial and wonderful like Ruby and something powerful and behemoth like CLR, and you put them together and just say Ruby CLR. You're saying it very very casually, like there's really no problem there.
Well, it's really like it was meant to be together, right? You know, and you'll see that, I guess, a lot of the Ruby guys are certainly open source with a capital O, capital S kind of guys. And, you know, I'm actually rather surprised at the kind of reception that those guys have given Ruby CLR. They're actually really happy that that's happening both on the Microsoft side and the JRuby side to build Ruby into the JVM, right? Both giant corporate behemoths that are relatively anti-open source.
Now, why is it that someone clever like you has to go and do this as opposed to a behemoth having the idea and pulling it off themselves?
Because a giant behemoth is actually really hard to get anything done. So, you know, Microsoft's a big company, and they're resource-constrained just like everybody else. And I'm a guy that has a way of funding the development of this stuff myself. So I'm just going out, doing it, giving it back out to the community, and seeing what happens with it.
So how are you funding this? I mean, I know when I work on DOSBlog, that doesn't exactly get monetized. I think we've had all of like $50 in donations. How are you monetizing Ruby CLR?
Well, I get to monetize it because I'm a partner at a consulting firm called Object Sharp up in Toronto. And so it's really because we have all sorts of other guys that do real billable work that we can fund my little science experiments from time to time.
But you do anticipate actually making money off this. Well, you're going to use this in real projects.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Like right now, it's all about trying to build the thing to create a market to sell Ruby services into the .NET world. Right? Because really, if you think about it, most business applications are really kind of scripting together a whole bunch of database components and GUI components and those kinds of things. So if we're just gluing together a whole bunch of stuff, why don't we use the most powerful, flexible language that we can to glue all that stuff together?
So you've already written Avalon, WinForms applications, particularly the one that demos the best when I demo your stuff is the RSS reader. If someone were going to actually deploy this on a system, let's assume a machine already has a .NET framework. Is your system .NET framework specific? And how would they deploy that?
Yeah, they'll need .NET Framework 2.0 because Ruby CLR leverages specific features that only exist in .NET 2.0. You'll have to install Ruby itself on your box. And the nice thing is that there's a whole bunch of, you know, instant Ruby types of installs that are out there. And the one in particular is called the One-Click Ruby Installer. So it's an MSI. You go download this thing, and it installs all the stuff you need to run Ruby. And then you go grab Ruby CLR. And all you need to do is go to rubyforge.org/project/rubyclr, and that's where that thing lives. You can go download the bits. It's distributed in a compiled DLL, because part of Ruby CLR is written in C++. So the DLL is already pre-compiled for you, and a whole bunch of source code, because most of the interesting parts of Ruby CLR are actually written in Ruby.
So could I actually do this in a no-touch deploy, kind of a just X-copy, like not actually install Ruby, but just have my app plus Ruby plus Ruby CLR all in one folder and just drop it on the system?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a goal. So the key prerequisite is to have Ruby on your system already. The MSI does enough of the tricky stuff to make sure it just works. I already have a guy that's contributed a patch to Ruby CLR where it's going to be a gem, and a gem is a really nice way of, you know, just typing gem space install space Ruby CLR. That's what the install experience is going to be in Ruby CLR in the next release.
Wow, so that means that if I were writing the application, I could write a little installer that would just shell out, call gem install Ruby CLR, and just keep copying my application. And it could have an icon and sit in the start menu, and no one would have to know it was running in Ruby.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
That's fantastic. So that talk is tonight at 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
Not sure if we'll get the podcast up by then, but if you do see it, if you get the podcast, go see John's talk. And we're going to be doing a Birds of a Feather on Ruby on...
It's tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, somewhere in TechEd.
Cool. Fantastic. Thanks a lot, John.
This portion of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Codesmith Tools, the most powerful code generation tool on the market. With features such as template-based code generation, a rich integrated template development environment, including statement completion, and a highly extensible metadata system that includes database schema, XML, and many other sources. And now Hansel Minutes listeners can get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100, and just go online to www.codesmithtools.com. And now let's get back to Hansel Minutes.
Hey, we're hanging out on the TechEd floor, and I've just bumped into my arch nemesis, Jeff Atwood. I'm here with my buddy, Patrick Caldwell. Jeff Atwood, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Enjoying TechEd. It's my first TechEd, so I'm a virgin at TechEd.
This is your first... Do we say virgin on a podcast? Are we allowed to do that? This is your first TechEd. What have you been doing for the last 15 years not going to TechEd?
Well, when you don't work for a company that values developers, then you don't get to go to things like this. So now I work for a company that actually values developers.
Wow, I would really like to know what company you worked for before that didn't value developers.
I mentioned the name. I currently work for Vertigo Software in Point Richmond in the San Francisco Bay Area. And it's great. I'm a technical evangelist there, technically. Nobody knows what that means. It's great because nobody knows what I do, so I can just do whatever I want now.
Does that involve writing code, or is it just being a pundit?
Sometimes. Right now, I'm focusing on Team System. We're trying to get Team System engagements based on our adoption of Team System and sort of get people to use it, although it costs, you know, $1 billion. We're trying to convince people that it's worth it.
So it costs $1 billion, and you're advocating that it's awesome.
Well, some companies have $1 billion. See, that's the thing. So, you know, some people don't, some people do. It's a great tool. It's a great tool. I mean, what they're doing totally makes sense. It sort of moves you up the evolutionary ladder of developers, right? Because a lot of developers, particularly in IT shops, don't really do unit testing even, right? So this is a new thing to them. So exposing them to unit testing, code coverage, really basic stuff, you know, to more advanced developers is still moving them up the evolutionary ladder. So I view it as a very good thing. So I'm just in there evangelizing what, you know, a lot of advanced developers that read blogs sort of already know, but not everybody knows that stuff.
Okay, so point, counterpoint. My buddy Patrick Caldwell is here with me. We're going to be doing a talk at 4:30. We're a Subversion NUnit NAT shop. So you take Team System, and he'll take all the free software.
Okay, well,
and so tell me why I should use Team System.
Yeah, well, first you should throw all that crap out. That's all crap. No, I'm kidding. Actually, one of the first things we say to people, you know, and actually I ask these questions, if you're a hardcore Subversion NUnit shop, you're probably not going to want to change because you have a certain way that you're used to working, and, you know, Team System follows some of the conventions, but not all of them. So I wouldn't recommend, if you have a process, stick with the process. If you have something that's working, like I said, this is for developers at IT shops who really haven't reached that evolutionary plateau yet where they're doing this stuff. That's what this product is for. This really isn't for guys like you. I mean, you should probably be familiar with it in sort of how it interoperates and stuff, but it's really not for you. Nothing personal. But I wouldn't actually advocate that you switch if you have a process that you like.
So that reminds me of the time when Microsoft bought OneTree software and we all started using Visual Source Safe because it was free. So I mean, Microsoft introduced source control. You were probably during that time, right, Patrick? Did you use Source Safe because that's what was free and what came out?
No, I was actually at Intel at the time and we were using PBCS on the command line.
Wow.
And never getting corrupted databases.
Do you miss not having corruption? Did you feel like you missed out by not experiencing the corruption, the pain?
No, I've experienced it since then. Right, I've used VSS on subsequently, but not when they first bought OneTree, we didn't use it. I'm enjoying the fact that Subversion, you can actually find where the files are and potentially fix them because they're just text files.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, let me tell you, great art comes from great pain. You see? So you have to experience the pain to build the really beautiful things. You'll see this in art and music a lot. In all seriousness, it is analogous to SourceSafe in that it sort of moves you. And SourceSafe didn't always suck. People forget, like, when it first was purchased, it was sort of a relatively cutting-edge source control system. Problem is they sort of just never developed it again. It was like there was one version and then bug fixes for, like, 8 years, 9 years, however long. It was a long time. So, you know, it really is analogous to that. It's a baseline level of quality, if you can afford it, that sort of gets you thinking about these processes. For one thing, you capture data. Like, how many bugs did we have? How many bugs did we fix last week? How many shops can't even answer that question? A lot.
So let me ask you this. Is the jump from either nothing or from, well, virtually nothing, SourceSafe, is the jump from SourceSafe to TFS a jump that has to include bug fixing and task management and all that kind of stuff? Or what if I just want a source control system from Microsoft and that's it?
You have to want the source control part because that's sort of the heart of the system. So if you do want source control, then you're golden. All the other stuff is like icing on the cake, if you will, right? You don't have to use it. Like, you don't have to use all the advanced reporting capabilities. You don't have to use the bug tracking. You could use it just for source control. It'd be a relatively pricey source control system. But you could certainly do that. And I think a lot of shops actually will do that. It'll just be a better source control system. I mean, shelving, for one thing. Actually, this is one thing that Subversion kind of doesn't really have. It's basically a little personal private branch that you create. You just shelf your stuff, and you can pull it up, put it on the shelf, and then pull it back down. Other developers can pull it back down. It's really convenient.
So, Patrick, how would you do the equivalent of what he just said, shelving in Subversion?
That's essentially the same thing, right? You create your own branch in another repository. So, like, we have a users repository. I've got a P. Caldwell folder in the users repository, and I just copy whatever I'm working on there. And with Subversion, you can just switch and then check in changes there. But I have to know what it means, right? And I have to know what I'm doing, and there's no button that says shelf. So the advantage to TFS is that there is a button that says shelf, and it's easy to explain what that means, right? And on the source control side, I'm surprised to hear you say that you think people will go for just the source control part, because it's kind of overkill, right? And I was in a Rational shop for a while, and and even Rational sort of told us, hey, if you're just going to run ClearCase, don't bother, right? The cool part about ClearCase is that it works with ClearQuest and it works with, all the rest of the tool suite. If you've got the $250,000 in licensing fees, right, it all works holistically. TFS is, similar. The selling point, right, is that it's all integrated. We don't have any of that stuff. So, yeah, we have Subversion. We have actually ClearQuest. We have, all these other tools, and we manage to make them integrated, but it's because we've established processes to do that, not because it came that way, right? So we didn't have the $1 trillion. We were willing to do the work, but it means a lot more training, a lot more process overhead, right? But it was worth it for us.
So it's essentially through, like, sheer force of will. And if you have really talented developers who can sort of come up with that process and, like, teach the other developers about it, then you're golden. But a lot of places don't have that, man. I mean, it's really common not to have that. It's more common you have a lot of money, but not a lot of expertise. So that's really what Team System is about. And it's about integration, the one-button operations. And they're really compatible worldviews, but I definitely wouldn't. One of the first things I ask, like I said, is, are you a hardcore Subversion, in unit shop? Then you probably wouldn't want to switch.
And I think that it Rational had the same sort of strategy, right? They really appealed to places that had no process, and, hey, just pay us the money and we'll give you process, as opposed to somebody that already has process in place. Then they're going to, if they buy TFS, then they're going to, well, it doesn't really fit my process. And it was the same thing with RUP, right? A lot of people wanted to use the Rational suite, but they didn't want to buy into the full high ceremony, RUP, and they kind of, well, we can make it work for agile development if you don't really use the product the way it's intended to be used. But if you don't have any process and then they can just drop it in and say, hey, look, do it like this, it's cool.
And Team Systems also is very lightweight. In fact, there's a Scrum process template in addition to the Microsoft Agile process template. So it does actually accommodate. And they say, look, you can not use all the features that you don't need. You can just, cherry pick the things that are interesting to you and use them. They don't really force you to have a process. It's just all this cool stuff is there for you to take advantage of. And you'll see teams, you go in and talk to them, they start thinking about all this stuff, which is the whole point. Like, wow, maybe we should all have a shared source control server and not work in these little departments where nobody knows what anybody's doing. So It just drags them up a rung in the evolutionary ladder. On the other hand, the pricing can be difficult for people to deal with. The analogy I use, it's like sort of like walking into McDonald's and seeing like, you know, $50 flank steak on the menu. This is just not something, it's a whole pricing level that you don't expect from McDonald's. It could be an excellent steak, but you didn't really walk into McDonald's expecting, you know, a $40, $50 steak on the menu. So it sort of shocks people. But if you look at like the pricing of rational, the things that if you went down a feature matrix and said, hey, what does this actually compare to and how much does it cost? It's actually cheaper than the rational systems. It's just so few people actually look at that because it's just not a mainstream tool, right? Nobody says, oh, I'm going to use rational.
They're comparing it to BSS, which they get with their MSDN license, or they're comparing it to Subversion or CVS, which they can go get for, you know, free as in puppy. But what you're right. I mean, when you compare it to rational, I'm sure it's competitive. Or any of the other big, you know, Intersolve or any of the other big, it's not, Merit, sorry. Then it is competitive.
Yeah. So, like, you're expecting a Happy Meal, right? And
I'm having trouble keeping track of all these analogies. So I heard free like a puppy, Subversion, flank steak at McDonald's, TVS.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, fantastic. And that's it from here on the Tech Ed floor with Jeff Atwood and Patrick Caldwell.
This portion of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by ExceedZip for .NET, the only multi-talented compression component. Use it to handle files, folders, and data anywhere easily in zip, tar, and gzip files, on FTP servers, in streams, in memory, and more. Solve all your data manipulation needs at once. And now you can get 20% off any Exceed component or suite just for listening to Hansel Minutes. Go to shrinkster.com/FPT and enter coupon code HM-20-20. And now let's get back to Hansel Minutes.
We're hanging out at the TLC, the Technical Learning Center. Not a cabana, right? It's not the cabanas like they called it last year. It's not the tent. It's the TLC. And I got Clemens Vasters. I got Joshua Flanagan, Flim Flan, and I got Steve Maines. I got two Indigo guys, two non-Indigo guys. And we're sitting here trying to talk about DOSBlog and the future of DOSBlog. We sent out a note to our entire DOSBlog developers group and said, hey, guys, let's all hook up a tech ed. And I think we got about 10 people saying, yeah, we'll check it out. It is now 15 minutes into our meeting. And who has shown up, Clemens?
We have four people showing up.
And is this representative of open source software in some way?
Yeah, everybody cries hooray, and then in the end, it's two guys doing the work.
How do you feel about that, Joshua, as someone who just recently jumped right back into DOSBlog and started doing some serious damage?
Well, I figured this is exactly why I wanted to have something like this, so we could get some direction and motivation to get people motivated to contribute, but I guess we need to get something before that.
Do you think we ought to just find people walking by and just grab them? Like, do you have ASP.NET skills? Maybe they'll get involved.
That might work. It might be more effective than our current approach.
We would need weapons too.
Yeah, I see. Nerf guns or something.
Now, Steve Main from the Indigo team. Now, you're not in a DOSBlog project, but you showed up because of the massive crowd that you saw forming around us here, right?
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely, Scott. It was really your animal magnetism that, you know, pulled me in off the street.
Well, I appreciate that very much. So it is not a coincidence that two of the guys here are from the Indigo team. Why in the world would the DOSBlog open source team, like Josh or myself and the other guys that didn't show, have any interest in talking to the Indigo team? And Clemens, as the grandfather or great-grandfather of DOSBlog, why do you care?
Oh, because we're trying to stage a complete takeover of the project.
So you're doing a hostile takeover of DOSBlog from the WCF point of view? WTF, what's the deal?
It's Daddy's coming home.
Daddy has returned to the project. Okay, so what is it you're going to break and plug in with Indigo?
I think we want to own the wire, that's all. You guys can do all the UI stuff, and we're just going to own the wire and everything that goes across the wire.
So this is very interesting, because ordinarily you would think there's not much going on the wire with something like a blog engine, but there's more entry points and exit points than one would think, right? What are the different places that information might flow into a blog?
The simplest one is certainly referrals, and that's a channel that's very interesting to police, first of all, because of the spam. It's an interesting place to drive statistics from. It's an interesting place to correlate information on. Then we have comments. We have we have mail to post things. We have mail that's outflowing for notifications. We have trackbacks, pingbacks. We've got all the APIs to or external web services to control things, so you can post stuff to it. And that's currently XML RPC. So you have all sorts of different endpoints that go in, except in addition to the UI stuff.
So the creepiest thing that you just said there was mail. Mail as POP3 as an API. Steve, do you think that that's kind of weird to say that Indigo could have a mail channel?
No, I don't think that's weird at all. I've actually written one. One of my personal absolute favorite features in early versions of DOSBlog was the mail-to-weblog functionality, which somehow we broke in later versions.
The reason that that's actually broke, I did a little analysis, is because that function has a cyclomatic complexity of 80. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So for those...
We can fix that. That would be Clemens' fault. No, I don't think it's weird to think about Indigo taking data in from all sorts of different transports. I mean, one of the things that I've really enjoyed doing is using Indigo extensibility to kind of make it stand up on its head and do tricks in all sorts of interesting ways. So I've done an XML RPC stack actually built on top of Indigo, which I think is kind of interesting, which is one of the reasons I'm standing here.
So in the last 30 seconds, you've said that you've written a POP3 channel for Indigo and an XML RPC. Where are these things? Are they in your pocket? Are they on CodePlex? Where would someone get a hold of that kind of stuff?
They will be on CodePlex soon. So the SMTP transport is actually on my blog. So it's on hyperthink.net. It was a port of the WSI2 transport I did, which got moved over to WSI3 and eventually over to Indigo. So it's kind of
SMTP, you said POP3.
Yeah, well, it's SMTP on receive and
So, Joshua, as someone who's worked on the DOSBlog program and you know the whole thing from, you know, left and right, but I assume you don't know much about Indigo, is this freaking you out?
Yes, absolutely.
and now, as someone who's recently jumped into the project and, you know, done a lot of really good stuff for us, does this make you want to just jump in Indigo and start doing some damage, or do you think that maybe it's time to just pick another blog engine?
No, absolutely. I'm intrigued. I want to jump right in and see what we got.
All right, very cool. Are you not going to make us run this thing on Longhorn, are you, Clemens?
No, you can run it on XP, you can run it on Windows Server 2003, you can run it on Vista and on the Longhorn stuff.
Fantastic. Well, this has been Scott Hanselman. I'm on the floor here at TechEd, and I'll catch you later.